You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome, and you are watching and listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's June 28th, 2021. Well, I've been on the road back from a whirlwind trip around the country, starting in the East Coast, winding up in Las Vegas, coming back. And I can tell you, as normal as things could be, I won't say it's the new normal. I won't say it's the old normal. Maybe it's a transitional normal that's taking place now, but things are definitely, well, as Eisenhower said, things are more like they are now than they've ever been before, right? So on that note, tell me your thoughts. How is your state or your town getting back to the new normal? Just send us an email to kl@carrielutz.com. With us talking about getting back to normal is a normal Monday for us with John Rubino in the afternoon, ruminating about what's going on in the country and the world. Make sure you go over to dollarcollapse.com, take a look at John's latest work. So, John, hey, it's been a couple of weeks, but got to decompress. You think the country is beginning to decompress here?
Hey, Carrie, welcome back. Things are kind of getting back to normal. I think a lot of people, at least in certain states, you know, without getting political, there some of the states are just totally blowing off the whole lockdown thing and going immediately back to normal. And things seem fine there so far. You know, it doesn't seem like there's a, any kind of a huge crisis or anything. So, you know what? Lord willing, this is the end of the pandemic experience for this generation, and we can go back to normal, hope that not too many people are traumatized by seeing kids running around with no masks on or anything. There's a really funny story out there. Probably not funny from the person who wrote it, because I think they were serious. But there's a reporter for the Daily Beast who reported on going out somewhere and seeing, you know, kids without masks and families together out in public. And he said, it's like being in a horror movie. Because I think he really misses, apparently, the days of everybody being locked down and or masked and socially distanced and everything. So I think the transition is not without its traumas, but I hope that it's, you know, it's real and it's lasting and this is it. But, you know, it's not guaranteed, because there's some variant of COVID that's out there that has everybody spooked. And it's being blamed for a lot of stuff in other countries. And so it hasn't really come to the U.S. It may not, you know, it might be a total false alarm, but it's making international headlines now. So we're not guaranteed to be out of the woods yet, but we can hope, you know, that more or less normal life is returning, and we can start focusing again on the real stuff, like gigantic financial crises coming our way and stuff like that we spent so much time on in the past, and that was so much fun compared to this last year.
Hey, well, COVID isn't even the leading headline now. We're talking about the Miami condo collapse. Miami Beach condo collapse. And I have to tell you, like, I've been going to Miami Beach since I'm 6 years old. And since I could think and kind of understood construction techniques and such, I'm just surprised it hasn't happened sooner, because A, shoddy construction, B, they cheat on stuff. And my guess is they probably did not drive those pilings in deep enough to support that structure. And with added corrosion and benign neglect over time, the thing collapsed. But we'll have to wait for the forensic engineers, the failure analysts, to do their thing. But it's just interesting how nobody's thinking about COVID. They're thinking about, oh my God, all those people dying in Miami.
Gary, what are you implying that there's corruption in Miami? Oh my God! All right, I've never thought of that, but you know what? Let me put on my tinfoil hat for a second here, because CNN executives are quoted as saying that as soon as the pandemic is over and Trump's out of the way, they need something else to keep the ratings up, and climate change is going to be the next thing that they're going to push. So isn't it interesting that just as, you know, Florida goes off lockdown, Texas goes off lockdown, normal life seems to be returning, we get a disaster that is attributed to rising sea levels, eroding the foundations out from under buildings. So I'm not saying that's, you know, that's the whole narrative or any of that that I just said is true. I'm just saying, isn't it a funny coincidence timing-wise?
Yeah, well, like I say, I've always had misgivings since I'm old enough to think on my own about building stuff on barrier islands because they're alive, they're shifting, they're moving. And a lot of barrier islands that were once with us aren't there anymore. And when you get a real bad hurricane, that's how you get these inlets cut into barrier islands. It happened in West Hampton Beach in New York, in New York's Long Island. About 20 years ago, this one little stretch of the island, a hurricane came through and cut it off from the rest of the island. And for like years, people could not get to their houses till the Army Corps of Engineers finally rebuilt it. Now, I'm not anti-progress here. I'm anti-stupidity. There's nothing intelligent about building on barrier islands. It's an act of utter madness. There used to be a barrier island right in Jamaica Bay off of Queens, where Kennedy Airport is now. And in the 1800s, that place had a couple of huge inns. It was really a popular resort. And you know what? One bad storm and that place disappeared. Barrier islands are just one storm away from oblivion. And that's the reality. Got nothing to do with climate change. It's got to do with the fact that these things are like not suitable for modern construction, or perhaps they didn't go down far enough. And then you've got sea level, you know, the water table comes right up, it's salt water, and it's deteriorating the pilings, all these things. There's probably a latent defect in the building that took this combination of neglect and perhaps rising sea levels to bring it down. But I guess we'll find out eventually.
Yeah, and it's the rising sea level thing is the political angle here, because if they can attribute buildings collapsing near the coast to the fact that the ocean is 2.4 centimeters higher than it was 10 years ago, then you know that opens up an avenue for extreme government control of building and stuff like that. But you know what? You and I've talked about this a lot of times in the past. You know, every hurricane season, we have this conversation about how in a lot of cases, the most attractive parts of the world are also the most dangerous. And there's a causality there, you know, because oceans are gorgeous and the things that make earthquakes also make really pretty mountains and things. So, you know, we're moving millions and millions of people to places that are prone to natural disasters. And because of that, it's just a matter of time before we get some incredibly expensive, in terms of both of money and lives, disaster. Where, you know, whether it's the San Andreas Fault or out here where I am in Washington, there's the Cascadia subduction zone, which, you know, look it up. There are videos of guys saying 1,000-foot high tsunami, you know, things like that. The entire coast will be unrecognizable. And then in South Florida, it's Hurricane Alley, right? You know, there's going to be a Cat 5 that hits Miami someday. And it's going to cost $1 trillion when it happens. So we're kind of setting ourselves up for stuff like this. And the way the universe works is it's not one at a time. You know, when you're unprepared for multiple disasters, that's when you get multiple disasters. So I think, you know, completely leaving aside the financial stuff that's coming, there are big natural disasters waiting to happen just because we've set things up to be, you know, so that we're extremely vulnerable to them, you know, and then combine that with the fact that we're over leveraged. We owe way too much money and we can't pay our bills already. You know, we've got a gigantic financial crisis coming. even if the natural world behaves perfectly for the next 50 years. But, you know, this is the national equivalent of when you're when you've maxed out a bunch of credit cards and your roof leaks, that's a potentially catastrophic problem. That's what a big earthquake or a Cat 5 hurricane hitting Miami or whatever would be for us in our current financial situation. So, you know, we don't have to look at the Middle East or Russia or China or anything for the precipitating event for the next financial crisis. It's completely possible that we, you know, that we just have some garden variety natural disaster that tips us over the edge.
Well, look at how the pandemic almost tipped us over the edge. Or maybe it did tip us over the edge and we just don't know it yet. And yeah, to see a Cat 5, the hurricane hit a major population center and reduce it to rubble. Yeah, that could very well be the precipitating force. Well, in the meantime, inflation seems to be receding. Lumber prices have dropped by 50%, but they're still over double where they were a year ago. And copper is down a little. Gold is down a little. Silver is down a little, and hey, things are great, right?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
FPX Nickel is developing the large-scale Dakar Nickel District in central British Columbia. Within the district is FPX Nickel's PEA stage Baptiste Nickel Deposit, which is projected to be among the world's top 10 largest nickel mines by annual output. The Baptiste Deposit has the potential for the lowest quartile operating costs at just $2.74 per pound. And compared to recent global nickel mines, the project requires a low capex. FPX is also commencing its first ever drill program at its Van target in the Dakar Nickel District. Surface samples have indicated that the Van target footprint is larger in scale and 10 to 15% higher in grade than Baptiste. FPX Nickel trades in Canada as FPX and on the OTC under FPOCF. To learn more, go to FPXNickel.com. That's FPXNickel.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
We've got cross currents out there right now. I don't like times like this because nothing's clear. You know, you can't say anything with certainty because, yeah, in inflation, the headline number for inflation is horrendous right now. You're seeing all these headlines about this is the biggest number in three decades and this is the 1970s again. And you know, based on just the headline CPI number, for instance, we're not far from that. You know, these are really scary inflation numbers. A lot of them, though, have been driven by extreme increases in industrial and agricultural commodities. You know, lumber quadrupled in just a couple of years. And a lot of other things like copper and iron ore and wheat, corn, all had not quite as extreme moves, but big moves during that time. And that filtered over into consumer prices. So we got these big numbers. But now if you look at a lot of the industrial commodities out there and the agricultural commodities, they're kind of coming back a little bit. Like lumber is down by 50% in just the last couple of months, which is a big deal for house prices. So there's an example of inflation moderating. And you know, corn prices, wheat prices, iron ore, copper, they're all way up from 2 years ago, but they're all somewhat down from 3 months ago. And so what does that mean? You know, how much of the last two or three years increase is still out there waiting to filter into higher consumer prices? It's hard to say. So we really don't know, but it's not nearly as scary as it was a couple of months ago when lumber was still on its upward trajectory and everything else was soaring. But we're still going to see big inflation numbers for quite some time. And, you know, Bank of America just came out with a forecast that included the term hyperinflation. They're talking about fairly extreme inflation for years, not months. So I don't know. I don't know what it all means, which is why I hate this cross current kind of environment where you can't say anything with certainty. It's just, well, on the one hand, this, and on the other hand, that. But that's where we are right now. So we should just watch it and see what happens, and don't place any big bets on either side of this until we see which way it's going.
Well, short of a deflationary disruption, which that's the last thing the Fed wants to allow, can't just print up all these currency units and not see a commensurate increase in production, productivity, and not see inflation. I just don't see it. You've seen inflation and housing prices. They haven't rolled back yet. And the stock market hasn't dropped by 50% either. So Yeah, lumber prices went up 400% and then they dropped by 50%. They're still 200% or more over where they were a year ago. Copper is still trading at 420 something a pound. So it's not trading at its all-time high, but pullbacks like that are normal. I don't see any let up in commodity price inflation, but you know, I could be wrong. I think you need to steer the course ahead that you see is most likely, maybe not bet all your chips on it for sure. Hey, GDP growth is going higher, but where are the jobs? And what about those states that have canceled unemployment bonus benefits and have just canceled unemployment altogether, extended benefits? Because
that's another cross current story.
Yeah, the theory of that people are getting paid not to work, you know, just like farmers getting paid not to plant crops. The more you pay the farmers not to plant crops, the less crops they plant. The more you pay people not to work, the less on the books jobs they're going to have. And I think that's all changing now.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. The states that did away with the extra unemployment benefits have seen their employment picture brighten more quickly than other states. So I think that is going to become the trend again. You know, we're normalizing. We're basically done with this whole pandemic lockdown thing psychologically. Did you know that Carnival Cruise Lines booked a 40% increase quarter over quarter in traffic? You know, that they are back to their old normal selves. Remember when cruise lines were never going to recover? That was what I thought. I thought, who in their right mind would go on a cruise knowing that if one person has some new flu or something like that, you might be locked down for months, like that one cruise ship that just went from port to port and nobody would let them off, you know? So why would you risk that? But apparently everybody's willing to risk that again. You know, we have just washed our hands of the whole thing. We're just done with lockdowns now. So, I mean, it's a good thing, I think. You know, I think that, you know, barring some new, completely new disease, you know, some variant of COVID that just bypasses all the vaccines and all the natural immunity that come from being sick in the past, we're not going back to lockdowns again. Nobody wants to do that. Or, that's not true. 20% of the population really wants to stay with the whole lockdown thing and keep on wearing masks. But 80% of the people in the country have no interest in going back.
Hey, imagine if we had a pandemic, but nobody reported it. That's kind of like the sound of one hand clapping, or if a tree falls down in a forest and, you know, nobody's there to hear it. Did it really happen? you know, all these profound philosophical questions really come into play, John. And the fact is, like in Las Vegas, nobody's wearing a mask in the entire city, except Asians, certain Asian tourists. Not any reason. I think it's a cultural thing with them. They've been doing this for pandemics for a long time. And the help at the hotels and casinos are required wear masks, but there's a big sign that says anyone who's been vaccinated, you know, you don't have to wear a mask, but if you haven't been vaccinated, you must wear a mask. And it didn't seem like, I guess, the whole planet's vaccinated now, the whole country. The entire city of Las Vegas has been vaccinated. John, you can rest easy.
That's what my gym did, my health club, where they have a sign that says if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask, but we won't ask you in any event. You know, so everybody just stopped wearing masks on that day. You know, it just ended. So, yeah. And, you know, you got to feel really bad for the people who work in hospitality right now, because wearing a mask is uncomfortable. You flew, so you know what it's like to have a mask on for 6 or 8 hours. I did that one time. And I was dizzy by the end of it, you know, from breathing your own breath back in. It is not the quality of air that you're used to, and you really feel it. So these guys in casinos, or, you know, wherever in Las Vegas that you were, where the people had to wear masks all day long, I pity them. Really sorry that they...
tobacco smoke. Hey, well, leave it. Understand that in the airlines and the airports, that's federal jurisdiction. And they're the last ones to kind of catch on that the pandemic's over, which is exactly what you would expect from the federal government, right?
This federal government. Yeah, I guess, you know, I'm looking forward to the day when MSNBC has Anthony Fauci on and their ratings fall so far that they decide never to have him back on because nobody cares anymore. You know, I think that's that day might be coming. And at that point, everybody's just going to have to forget this ever happened.
Yeah. Hey, we could debate the merits of the lockdowns, the merits of the mask mandate, all these things. But you know what? In the end, it's irrelevant to the debate because it's what happened. It's what we were forced to do. And then now the governors, they really don't want to give up that power, but they don't have any choice. And a lot of states out there are passing measures to rein in their governor's emergency powers. And there are governors out there who are probably going to lose their jobs as a result of it. I can think of four or five out there. So maybe the fact that all this happened, even though it's highly negative, will in the long run have a salutary effect in terms of making the country more libertarian. With all judgment, I'm not overly optimistic, but I think in certain respects, the need for checks and balances has never been more obvious and apparent to large swaths of the population who might not have otherwise thought that just a few short months ago, John, or a year ago.
Yeah, we'll have to sort out the political impact of all of this over time. And I think that the next couple of elections will help because, you know, on the one hand, you've got a lot of people leaving some states to move to other states.
I would be. Why would they do such a thing? But so short-sighted.
Yeah, but the impact of that politically is kind of hard to gauge because you've got people who didn't agree with the politics of their old states necessarily leaving, which makes the old states that much more whatever they were because the people who disagreed are leaving. But those people are moving to other states, and will they bring new attitudes? Yeah, there might be kind of a homogenization process going on. Or it might be the opposite. You know, we might be solidifying the differences geographically. So we'll see how it all plays out. But this kind of accelerated some of the trends that were already in place. And I'm really not sure how it's going to play out or what it means. But the next couple of elections will give us a lot of insight into who the average voter thinks did a good job and who did a bad job during all of this.
Yeah. And I think the judgment has yet to be rendered. I think they'll be talking about this for a long time. And hopefully we won't repeat the mistakes that we made this time on the next one, because there will be another one. There's always another Hong Kong flu just around the corner. They usually emanate from Asia, but not always. We had the Spanish flu back in World War I at the end of it. So in any event.
Oh, and Carrie, the Wuhan lab thing we haven't talked about yet, that suddenly became a big issue, whereas it wasn't before. There was a mainstream consensus about the origins of the virus. And now it's a point of contention, which, again, we'll see how it plays out because we really don't know anything for a fact yet. But there's a lot of information out there that's just coming to light for a lot of people, you know, who didn't see it during the pandemic. So I don't know. This is cross currents. That's the theme of my take on all of this. Now, there are things pointing in pretty much every direction in every field right now, and it's really hard to get a handle on the near term direction. You know, we know long term pretty much what's going on and where we're headed, but the next 6 months to a year, very hard to call.
Agreed. And, you know, we're just looking at this and thinking how it emanated. You know, that theory has been around for a long time. Evidently, a lot of it was suppressed by the very people who were responsible for investigating it. And, you know, maybe we'll get to the bottom of it, but it sure doesn't look good for China allowing this to occur. Let's assume that it wasn't intentional. We have no basis for saying whether it's intentional or not. but they sure did go into damage control mode, removing data from databases, things like that, that made the whole analysis of the virus and its origins much more difficult. So, you know, like in the law, when somebody's hiding something, then is a good thing. And when they're telling a lie, then you really can't believe anything they tell you. And I think that's a good policy when you're dealing with certain countries for sure. Well, gold prices took a hit last week and the week before. John, what's your take?
I think it's sell in May and go away time. You know, summers are frequently, not always, but frequently boring for precious metals. And your listeners and viewers know why. We've talked about this before, but this is kind of like that. This is what it normally feels like because, you know, gold and silver aren't even really down much today. They're down just fractionally, but gold and silver mining stocks are down harder, which is more of a kind of a bear market-ish thing. Like stocks have had such a huge run that I think a bigger risk than seasonality for precious metals is a sharp break in the big stock market indexes that take the miners and by implication the bullion prices down with them. So that feels like the big risk to me that you know, that everything starts to seem okay out there, which means interest rates might go back up to normal levels and the Fed might ease sooner than it was going to otherwise. And so you get, you know, a pre-taper tantrum, not a taper tantrum, because it'll happen even before the Fed actually starts raising interest rates. And that'll be dangerous for precious metals. But it'll also be a buying opportunity for a lot of the better miners. And if you're stacking still out there, you know, you want to get some cheap gold and silver coins, you might have one more chance before everything just takes off. So we could look back on a boring summer with slightly lower gold and weak gold and silver mining stocks as a blessing because it was our last chance to really load up.
Yeah, that could very well be the case. Unfortunately, we're never going to know until it's too late. But it's too late for us. We got to get going. Anyways, make sure you go over to John's site, dollarcollapse.com. Sign up for his free newsletter. He's prolific in his writing and very insightful, too. Take a look at our site and sign up for a newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. John, good to be back with you. Hey, I am reinvigorated and ready to take on the next COVID variant. What's that variant called? The Delta or the Alpha Omega? I don't know. I can't keep track of them anymore. Beta?
Well, that can't stick. We need a country or a city to name it after so we can be racist. So,
all right. Well, maybe it'll be the Beijing variant. I don't know.
Yeah.
Nasty, though. Or maybe the Guangzhou, or I don't know. Maybe we should have a contest to name the next COVID variant. But that's for another day. John, questions, comments for John, myself, just shoot us an email, kl@carrylutz.com. I'm sitting on a stack of emails that's like overflowing from my inbox, John. So we will get to them. Hopefully we'll do a couple next week. In the meantime, have a great week all, and we'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.